You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Consumption is a disease that has truly left its mark on poetry and literature. Many a famous writer has killed off a character with consumption. And then there, of course, is the stereotype of the poet wasting away from lung disease. And that is our cue to welcome University of Michigan medical historian and PBS contributor Dr. Howard Markel here with us to talk about the last gasps of John Keats. So here we are, Dead Poet Society time. Keats really is the very definition of the English Romantic poet, isn't he?
He is indeed. He's one of the best poets probably after Shakespeare in the English language. I'm a frustrated English professor. I was an English major here at Michigan, so it's always a joy to get to read someone like John Keats again.
And a spoiler alert, on this day in 1821, John Keats died of?
Tuberculosis, or as they called it, that consumption, hence the last gasp of John Keats.
And there's a rather sad irony in the fact that Keats actually trained for a career in medicine.
Yes, that's something that very few people know. So he his father died when he was a young man, a young boy, and his mother left the family, so he was reared by his grandparents and then a guardian. And his guardian said, you know, maybe you should get a job that you can make some money at.
Learn a trade,
right.
Kid.
And medicine was then a trade. So at 15, he was apprenticed to an apothecary surgeon named Thomas Hammonds for a lot of money. It was £210 for room and board for a five-year period. That's about almost $18,000 today. And he learned how to set fractures and how to bleed people and deliver babies and compound medicines. But he also was a house pupil at the famous Guy's Hospital in London. It's no longer around, but it was one of the great hospitals of the 19th and much of the 20th century.
So when you say apothecary surgeon, is that a physician or was there a different pecking order of medicine?
Well, there is a very distinct pecking order at that time and to this day to some extent in Great Britain. It's sort of like a pyramid. So at the apex is the physician. These are doctors who trained and studied and got a degree at Oxford or Cambridge or Edinburgh. And they were considered the most knowledgeable of doctors, and they saw the most well-healed or richest of patients, and hence they charged the highest of fees. And then there were surgeons. Now, surgeons, as you may or may not know, were affiliated with barbers, mm-hmm. the barber surgeon.
That's the barber pole.
Exactly.
Yes.
With the red line is the blood going down. And barbers at that time did bleed as well as give people trims. But the surgeons separated from them and developed their own Royal Society of Surgeons in the early 1800s. And they were licensed to practice, but they were still just a notch below. They were considered craftsmen by the snooty physicians. And to this day, a surgeon in Great Britain is referred to as Mr. Jones rather than Dr. Jones. The physician retains that title of doctor.
And then apothecary, is that what we would call a pharmacist?
Initially, that's what they were. They would compound medicines and they would explain the medications. But there were very few physicians and there were very few surgeons out in the countryside in the provinces. So by 1815, apothecaries, by Act of Parliament, had various examinations and things that you had to do so that they could not only dispense medication, but they could diagnose and treat patients as well.
So John Keats picked up some pretty good medical skills. So the question is, here he is, a young man.
Yeah.
Did he ever see a patient?
He never saw a patient as a doctor. When he graduated, he was a year under the age of consent. He was 20 years of age, and you could not practice until you were 21. So he took a year off. He took a gap year.
Sharpened his pen?
Yeah. Before they were called gap years, he took one. He sharpened his quill, and he began writing poetry. And some of it was quite bad. But he developed and got better and better very quickly. And by the time he was 25, he had written several masterpieces.
And do we know how he acquired consumption?
Well, they say he was taking care of his brother Tom, who died in 1819. And while he was taking care of Tom, he may have inhaled the tuberculosis germ. That is possible. A lot of people shared beds and bedrooms at that time. And you have to be with someone who is very actively consumptive. They're coughing up the bacilli for 8 or more hours to contract it. So it could have been when Tom was sick. It could have been earlier. Who knows? But the story is he contracted it from his younger brother.
And did I see somewhere when he first coughed up blood, he knew that was it?
Well, yeah, near the end of his life. This is wonderful. So he was sent off to Italy on an ocean voyage. Many doctor prescribed that for young men of means for all sorts of things. When he got to Italy, he was taken care of by a man named James Clark, who has not been well served in the history of medicine. He's often referred to as incompetent or as a quack. In the end, it doesn't matter who took care of John Keats, because he had such bad consumption, he would have died no matter what. Now, near the end, near the very end of John Keats's life, he coughed up bright red blood. And he knew that this was arterial blood. And he said, I know this color. I am not long for this world. So he diagnosed his own demise, yes.
What did it mean to suffer from TB? Because it's something that we in 2017, thankfully, don't really have to worry about.
It was awful. I mean, consumption is a wonderful name for the disease, because once the bacilli is rampant, it consumes with a fiery pace. It destroys the lung tissue. It destroys other tissues. And as it destroys the lung tissue, it then destroys arteries. And that's why you cough up blood. But you also can't breathe very well to begin with. But as blood pools into the lungs, you basically suffocate. And there's all sorts of bad fevers that come at several points during the day. So it has gotten this romantic notion. You know, if you see La Traviata or La Boheme. Yeah, it's just a wonderful disease to die of. And I remember writing, it's not beautiful. It's a mess. It's a disgusting mess, both for the person who has it and the person who treats it.
And treatments were awful.
They were non-existent. I mean, they first of all, the four bodily humors still prevailed as the philosophy of the day. So Keats was bled a lot. He also was put on a starvation diet. I love this. It's very Italian. One anchovy per day and one piece of toast per day. And of course, he was prescribed laudanum, which is a tincture of opium. It's alcohol and opium in a liquid form. And he grew to like that a little bit too much, as most of us would. So there weren't any treatments at all that we would call modern or curative.
At what point did medicine, Howard, manage to pretty much control TB? I know not totally, right? Because aren't we kind of keeping a nervous eye on a super strain of TB that is pretty resistant to the drugs
still,
we have?
It's still the number two infectious killer in the world after AIDS, and sometimes it flips. And so depending on where you live, garden variety TB as well as drug resistant or extremely drug resistant TB is running around. It wasn't until 1881 that Robert Koch identified what we call Mycobacterium tuberculosis. But it wasn't until the late 1940s, early 1950s that antibiotics against TB were invented. And of course, you have to take those antibiotics, and it's not a 10-day course. It's a 6 to 12-month course, and people don't like to take medications for that long of a period. And when you stop your antibiotics early, you run the risk of not only being contagious to others, but developing a drug-resistant strain. And so it remains a huge problem, not so much in the United States, although there's about 10 to 20,000 cases a year in the United States. But in places like the former USSR, Asia, and South America, it is running rampant. It is not history by any means.
The last gasps of John Keats, who died of TB on this day in 1821. Howard Markel, University of Michigan medical historian and PBS contributor. Thank you so much.
Thank you.